I don't know. Duck and cover, bitches.
So we've been spending way too much time talking and chatting. It's been a while since we've been back together. Brett.
And I'm Brina.
Yep.
I don't know. I just want to happen at the same time every time we do that for some reason.
Damn it. And we're our podcast is Particularly Dangerous Situation. And we talk about cray cray weather.
We talk about particularly dangerous situations.
PDS, babes.
Weather and other disasters.
and of course, this has definitely been in the news with all of the highlights about the global climate change and mm-hmm. everybody's participation in trying to make it a better place to live. Good thing. I actually feel grateful that I'm old because I'm so scared.
Brett, I'm so happy to see your face again.
I know. I'm happy to see your face. I'm not shingles free, ladies and gentlemen. I still have them, but they're almost gone.
Oh, were you able to tell them that it was shingles last time?
I can't remember if I did or not. What was that? That was
either.
A Saturday, I think. And I think it was like It was right after that. It was the following Monday that I went in because I was like, this is not getting any better. Oh, it was because I remember I was putting on that steroid cream and stuff. And that's when I thought it was an actual spider bite.
Okay.
And so that's what it was determined to be until Monday rolled around and I was in excruciating pain. And like, remember, I think it was like the very end of the podcast. I would like kind of twinge my neck a little.
You were
and you're
definitely
like, oh,
twitching.
Yep, it's happening. Yeah. And it's like, so then it became almost convulsions. Like I felt like I was having seizures and there was crazy electric shocks. And I'm like, what the hell is going on in my body right now? I'm like, something's not right. So then I went back and actually it's crazy. The doctor looked at me and she's like, you have shingles. And I was like, excuse me, what? And she's like, you have a classic presentation. She's like, this is incredible. She's like, we don't ever really get to see it very often here. She, do you mind if I bring in my MA? And I was like, go ahead. You know? So then I became like, this, you know, what is it, like the teaching hospital, you know, the kind of thing situation.
Yeah.
So, really cool doctor. And she was the one who was like, you need to get another job. She's like, it's going to kill you. And I'm like, fair enough. Oh. I will listen to you. So
I literally got a text from you that says Brie .. I have fucking shingles. You didn't put the G to like emphasize, like I got fucking shingles.
No, it was like, God. Okay, so let me explain to the podcast family who's a bunch of listeners and whatnot that I'm not fucking old. Okay, I'm 43. I'm very active. I'm trim. I eat well. I have the blood work of a 15-year-old athlete. The only thing that is an issue with me is that I have a very, very stressful job and I have a lot of responsibility there. And in carrying that responsibility, I don't know how to properly process stress. I never have been able to. I'm not a person who like does yoga or meditates or like screams. You know, long story short, got a work note. Have been out for the last week. I officially go back tomorrow, probably to a crazy shitstorm. Hopefully not reactivating my shingles again. Fingers crossed. So yeah, I hope not either. for the sake of my own goddamn sanity.
Yeah.
So yeah. So that was my week. I got to spend lots of quality time with my dog and do research on my particularly dangerous situation.
I think last week was my first week back in college.
Yay! So that's been,
I love all my classes and
awesome.
I've done yoga 2 times so far because there's classes that you can take. Like they have like open classes at our rec center.
Yeah.
So they have a beginner's yoga class. It's vinyasa.
Fantastic.
I don't know, however you say it.
Yeah.
And the lady who leads it is amazing. And I'm into it now. And I'm really trying to focus on my breathing more than anything, especially because she's like, do downward dog or do what you want. You want to get in child's pose, do what your body's comfortable with. And so I'm able to be like, I'm going to child pose it for this breath or whatever. You know, like I don't feel bad for modifying it because I am not flexible anymore.
I'd be corpse pose. I'd be like, great. So I'm going to just lay here in corpse pose and focus on my breath.
Yeah, I think that would be okay with her.
Perfect.
I'm really enjoying that. And then Oh, I rented a locker. That was my
commitment. You know what? I know that sounds crazy, but that's actually like half the battle of you actually committing to doing stuff, because it's like, you're like, oh, I have a locker. I can put shit there. And you don't have to worry about like, just worry about stupid shit, you know, shit in your car, whatever.
Or like I've forgotten headphones and I refuse to work out without headphones because first world problems. I've forgotten shoes. I've forgotten like my bottoms. I've forgotten different things. And like, so now my locker has like, I'm going to bring some extra, but it has like an outfit and socks and then my Bluetooth headphones that I wear when I work out.
Amazing.
Not once again, I my husband's making fun of me because I own three pairs of headphones because I have the ones that come on my phone. And then I have my over the ears noise canceling, which I use for studying and now. And then I have Bluetooth ones that like go around my ears for exercising because the sweat shouldn't go in my over the head. And cords just mean I'm going to hit the cord and my phone's going to fall on the ground.
And I get frustrated and pissed off. Like,
it happens every time. And also, like, earbuds don't stay in my ears. I have ones that hook around.
Yeah. I actually have this. My husband was very sweet. So the ones that I have in here, these are ones I actually got from my boss. This was my bonus last Christmas. Nice. I'm not going to complain. They're Bose. Bose.
Bose.
Correct me, people, if I'm wrong. You Bose? Is Bose? Okay.
Bose, yeah.
So the noise canceling, and they're amazing. Rechargeable and like the whole gamut. So they're good shit. And then the funny thing was, is my husband didn't know that he got this for me. So my hubby got me Beats, over the ear Bluetooth ones. And I was like, oh my God, I love you. And he's like, oh, but your boss got you earphones. And I was like, babe, I'm like, I'm not going to take those to the gym. The ones that you gave me are definitely gym headphones because they're Bluetooth and there's no cords. And I'm huge. Like, I've always been, and being that I'm a runner, basically if I feel like if my ponytail swishes the wrong way, if I feel my tennis shoe lace touch my ankle, if the cord is making a noise, if it's my sunglasses are hitting me weird, like anything, if there's a distraction in any way, I hyper-focus on it and then I can't concentrate on my run.
Yeah.
And it bothers the fuck out of
me. It feels like an overstimulation kind of for me sometimes. I'm the same way with certain things. Or like if my hair is falling out of a ponytail, I can't ignore it. If my pants are rolling down, if there's certain things happening, I can't. Oh God, I had something like that recent. Oh, I was cross stitching and I couldn't get it right in the hole. And it was like, I could feel it in my teeth, which is a weird thing. Like,
right?
My stress is in my teeth. It's a weird thing, but God, people didn't think I'm fucking crazy, but I feel it inside my throat, my teeth, and inside my body. That feels like everything inside my body's tensing up.
I think it's a podcaster thing that like all of us have like crazy, stupid anxieties. All of us have some kind of issue. You know, I think actually that's everybody in general, but I feel like because we're under the microscope and we're podcasting to people, we're like, I'm fucked up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cause I definitely have PTSD. I definitely have ADHD because I've been diagnosed with that, and I have anxiety and I have like mild depression. I think sometimes my depression's not so bad, but my anxiety, which can very much be linked to my ADHD and this and that and this and that. So it's funny.
It's all linked. And actually, we had a conversation earlier, Bri and I, we were chatting about our cross stitching, and she had done a cross stitch and given away in a charity. And I was like, oh my God, the really great thing about my particularly dangerous situation that I'm going to discuss is that there is a lot of charities that came out of this. And I was so amazed at how many good things came from this. So super excited to share with you guys. I'm going to be talking about the 2004 tsunami that occurred in Thailand.
I'm ready for this.
So super duper stoked. I'm just gonna step up to the plate and go first because
You're going first. You literally had the segue and I want to hear this.
I was like, I'm so big. Rude. I'm just gonna go first.
No, it's not. Off.
Great. So I actually I think I had chatted with you, Bri, on Saturday or Friday, where I had mentioned I was supposed to go out to a party. We were waiting, Finally, AJ got ready. It was like 8:30. I was laying on the couch and I was like, dude, I'm exhausted. Like, I think you should just go. I had the opportunity to watch that movie.
Oh,
yeah. The Impossible.
The one that you're okay.
So I wound up and I'm so excited that I got to see it. And I think I was jazzed because I just signed up for YouTube TV. And I remember looking and seeing that the Showtime, you know, was on there, and I didn't realize it at the time because I was searching the movie on, I think, Apple Movies and then on IMDb, Amazon, whatever. And I was like, oh, I got to pay $2.99 to rent it. I was like, yeah, it's worth it. You know, I want to see it.
Yeah.
But then I found out it was on demand on Showtime and I was like, yes, free movie. So I was so stoked. So I grab a beer and I sit down with my computer so I can take some notes because this is actually, The Impossible is actually a true story documented about the Bennett family. And so they talk about this whole family. It was a family of five. It was two little boys.
Elizabeth. Sorry. Sorry, bad joke.
Oh. Like, wait, what?
Jane, over my head. Jane Austen.
Oh, yeah. I literary. Think, you're getting me in the wrong mode.
Not Little Women. The one with Mr. Darcy in it.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. That's the one they made a zombie
Pride
one.
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Yeah. Ah! So I was like, when you're seeing the Bennets, I'm like, oh, so I have Elizabeth and there Mr. Darcy there?
Go Mr. Darcy.
I told you dad jokes all day, every time.
All day, every day. Wear your dad jeans and your dad shoes, baby. So yeah, a fantastic movie. I'm going to say, right off the bat, I remember reading an account from another survivor, and they talked about what it was like to actually physically be in a tsunami. And mm-hmm. I'm not joking, folks. Holy cow. I can't imagine what it was like to have gone through that. And they portrayed it perfectly in the film.
Wow.
And I'll get to that later, exactly what it is. But insane. So let's get to the details of this craziness.
Please.
So, holidays, everybody likes to travel during the holidays. And especially over in Europe, I know that this is kind of a thing. I do have lots and lots of friends who are, from and have lived their whole lives in Hungary, Croatia, etc. And going on holiday is a big thing. And usually you would travel to another location. So unlike America, where we're like, okay, I'll go travel across the states or go one state over or three towns over and go see my family or my friends or whatever the case may be, you would actually take your family, your immediate family, and go someplace and enjoy a holiday. So mm-hmm. A lot of people would do this and find, of course, a tropical location. So Thailand was a wonderful place to travel. Sri Lanka was another top destination for a lot of families in Europe to travel for the holidays. It was inexpensive, and it was a great way to reconnect with your family and also mm-hmm. have a beautiful location to do so. So I saw amazing pictures. I saw lots and lots of firsthand videos of people who are celebrating, being at the beach and enjoying lovely dinners at sunset. And it's just incredible to kind of be sort of a part of that from afar, watching all this, you know, via Instagram, YouTube and whatnot. So it was really neat to see that. So you're seeing all of this amazing stuff happening. And they refer to this particular tsunami as the Boxing Day tsunami. I suppose I should cite my sources. I have a handful, but Wikipedia is, of course, my go-to. NOAA.gov. There was several sites, the BBC, CNBC, YouTube, and a handful of others that I would, again, source. And of course, I can put that in our links or whatever. But anyway, so they call it the Boxing Day.
Energy to do it.
I know.
Sorry, go on.
Fucking too tired. Goddamn shingles. this occurred again in December 2004. So December 26th, the day after Christmas, which is considered mm-hmm. Boxing Day mm-hmm. by the Europeans. The earthquake itself is what caused a tsunami, an earthquake. Mm-hmm. Okay. So a little bit of background here. Indonesia is the area in which this occurred. It lies in between the Pacific Ring of Fire. And I put in quotes, Johnny Cash.
Thank you.
That ring of fire. So yeah, I wrote that while I was doing my research. I'm like, ring of fire. So it's 25,000 mile horseshoe shape. That basically it has a continuous series of earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. Like it's constantly mm-hmm. active. And that's probably mm-hmm. one of the more active areas, for volcanic and earthquake activity. Now, that being said, what had happened at 7:58 a.m., an earthquake with a 9+, and I'll get to why we call it 9+ in a minute, occurred in the Indian Ocean off the coast of northern Sumatra. It happened along the Burma Plate and the Indian Plate. So these are two tectonic plates. And basically what happened is, of course, you'd had that shift, right?
Uh-huh.
So 1,000 miles of fault surface slipped about 50 feet along that subduction zone.
Wow.
That's pretty fucking sizable. That's a lot.
That's a huge
two stories. If
so,
not more.
It's being subducted down.
Correct. It dropped.
Damn, that is huge. That's a far. Yeah. Sorry. Okay.
It's a ginormous shift.
I'm trying to fathom this.
I know. Oh my God. You said fathom like water. Ah, that was like an unintentional dad joke.
How is fathom like?
Fathom. Fathoms. That's water. Water measurement. How many fathoms?
I made a joke without meaning to. Hey.
So it occurred, took place in two phases over several minutes. Mm-hmm. It caused a rise in the seafloor for several meters. It displaced. Okay, so I don't know if you guys remember science class, but they talk about water displacement. When you put something in water, how much moves, how much shifts, how much goes overflow, et cetera. It displaced 7.2 cubic miles of water. Miles. 7.2. Cubic miles. So it's not just like, oh, here's a mile. I mean, cubic, like a fucking cube, like filled like that volume. Many cubes of volume. That's a lot of water to displace. Okay.
Wow.
The shift of mass and the massive release of energy actually slightly altered the Earth's rotation.
Oh,
and
shit.
I wrote right after that, WTLF. What the literal fuck? I was like, it shifted the Earth's rotation. I'm sorry. That's a huge earthquake.
Yeah.
That's huge. I mean,
that is
shift.
Astonishing.
Right? I'm like, whoo, it gets
this
better.
2004?
Wow.
How did I feel like I
And I'm like trying
really
to remember. I'm
this.
Like, where was I? And I think I was in, fuck, where was I? I was in Vegas at that time. Yeah, there's some more astonishing facts. Just wait. This is amazing. A series of 100-foot high waves were created by the earthquake. So a 100-foot wave can take out an apartment complex. It's easily. And it's a series of 100-foot waves. So not just one. So the cool thing is on Wikipedia and on the weather.gov and a couple other weather-related sites, NOAA and another one for earthquakes, USGS, they actually have this really cool animation of a map where it shows basically like when the earthquake happens and what happens with the water. It was mesmerizing to watch. And I was like, whoa, this is intense. And it just, if you can imagine being there and actually seeing that, I was like, holy shit. So the tsunami devastated the northwestern coastlines of Sumatra. I know I'm going to say this wrong. I think it's Aceh province. It's A-C-E-H, Aceh, Aceh, I don't know,
okay.
In Indonesia, 20 minutes after the initial earthquake. So Banda Aceh, the closest major city, was the one that was most badly affected. And there's lots and lots of footage of people recording the earthquake as it's happening in that town.
Okay.
And you see people like dropping to the ground and like moving out of the way of these buildings, and they're huge buildings. And one person had film on YouTube, and I'm literally watching this building in the distance. It's probably about 4 or 5 stories high, and it's like a piece of rubber jello. I was like, oh my God. I mean, that's a well-built building because that's what
that's
you want.
That's how it should
be.
Yeah. For earthquakes, that's how it should be. But still,
exactly. But then they showed buildings that were the same height that were literally crumbling, and you know that they weren't meeting specs at all. So you're like, fuck.
Just imagine like a piece of string cheese and then shake it side to side.
Yep. Yeah. Or a dick, you know, whatever. Sorry, I had to go there.
It'll make more sense later on when I have my story,
it's
I think.
A wiggly dick. Hey. So the footage showed evidence of backflowing of the Aceh River, carrying debris and people from destroyed villages at the coast and transporting them 25 fucking miles inland. 25 miles from the coast into that's how much like water influx came from all of this. So I was like, holy shit. So they were completely devastated. Sri Lanka, 2 hours later. So 2 hours later, a small flood, which they call a positive wave, and then the ocean floor was exposed. So what happened is there was a small flood, right? So the water comes up, floods the area, and then all of a sudden it draws back rather quickly. And then it draws back and back and back and back. And people were so astonished by this. And you actually see footage of this everywhere. And I feel so bad because the one that kept coming up was this guy in red shorts. And I know if he made it, there would have been somewhere I found it. I think he was taken, unfortunately. But you see this guy just standing out there and people have to run. They're awestruck, but that's just it. You know, in our culture, when we see something like that, we're fascinated, of course.
Yeah.
And they're following it out. People are walking out with the waves as they're going out, watching reefs being exposed, fish jumping out of water. You know, like they're like, oh my God, this is incredible. And they're not taking heed or noticing that there's something on the horizon. So a couple of people did mention that, they did mention how it looked. Let me see if I can find that one.
Jesus Christ. I was going to say, like, my geology teacher saying that if there's ever like an earthquake, you have like 6 minutes essentially to run up a hill. Yep. But when that's happening, when it's going back, you got to run because that's not good.
You book it. You don't just, and the interesting thing is like everybody that, I read about like the firsthand, accounts of this, they talked about how like, you know, you had seconds,
yeah.
if that. To make a decision and get the fuck out, you know? I watched videos of people who are laughing, watching it come in the first time. They're like, ha ha ha, this is so funny. Look at this, it's crazy. And it's like coming up to the restaurant and now it's taking out chairs. And then they're like, you know, and then all of a sudden it's getting stronger and stronger. And then you hear the laughing shift screaming and you're just like, what the fuck? Like just drop the goddamn camera and save your life, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, we also have those people to thank for that footage. So I guess, thank you.
Yeah.
So the ocean floor was exposed half a mile. That's kind of deep, folks. At least 500 feet, I think, or more.
Half a mile?
So that's,
half a mile is like 2,000
feet. Are you sure? Because I thought 1,098 was a mile.
No, 5,280. Hold
on. You're the mathematician. You should know this. I could be completely wrong.
Hey,
but anyway.
Siri, how many feet is in half a mile?
I love that you, Siri, so much.
2,640 feet. So I think it's
so 1,000. Yeah, I was right. About 1,050. So
wait, no, 1,002. Half a mile is 26.
Oh,
how
okay.
many feet are in a mile?
5,280 feet.
5,280.
Okay, so 2,500 is half a mile. Okay, so that's still 2,500 feet. What the fuck? That was exposed.
That's almost 3 football. That's almost.
That much exposed.
3,000 football
fields. People don't see that. Sorry. And I think again, you're seeing all of this water just disappear. And now these people aren't familiar with it, you know? And I think there was one video that I watched that showed the water going out and then they took a picture of the horizon and the horizon showed these like almost, I think they were military boats maybe, or like fishing boats. And one of them was literally engulfed. And the guy goes, shit, that's a tsunami. And the guy's like, a what? And he goes, a tsunami. And then everybody panics. So I was like, oh, fuck. The floor was exposed half a mile, which is what they call a negative wave. So when your wave is going out and it's literally just taking everything, it's absorbing all of that water into the next wave. It's called a negative wave. Mm-hmm. And then it was followed by the massive tsunami and it had a 41 foot run up. So substantially high wave wall. It hit the southwest coast of Thailand during high tide, unfortunately, and caught many people off guard. Various other areas in India, the Maldives, Myanmar, Somalia, and parts of Malaysia and more were all affected by this. So I actually wrote a little section called The Numbers. So I'm going to get to the numbers. 14 countries were affected by this tsunami. On record as of right now, and this does, I believe, include the missing, 227,898 people were killed and or lost in this event. I did learn that it was one of the deadliest natural disasters in recorded history. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you know, we've been recording weather history since the 1800s, I believe.
Depending on what country.
Yeah.
I think we figured
between 1700 and 1800s, I think.
Yeah.
Possibly a little sooner depending on the country, but that is a long time. And to have that many people devastated by this is just insane. It was clocked at a 9.0 magnitude. However, and this is what I said I would get to later, several different companies, groups, USGS, there was one over in England, there's another one in Japan, all of them clocked a different magnitude, but it was so sort of, it was kind of small. So it was between 9 and 9.3. So not a huge difference, but I think it depended on where it was and at the time that it was actually clocked, plus the instrumentation used.
Also, so, when you get to 9, it's just like, they should just call that holy fuck. Like after 9, it's like once you have once you have an A+, you don't get an A++.
Duck and cover.
You know, like.
Duck and cover. It's called
fucking
fucked.
Cover.
You're fucked.
It's called, are you going to heaven or hell?
Right. Make amends now, people.
Oh my God.
So interestingly enough, it wasn't the most costly. I think partly because of where it was located, you're looking at, you know, not necessarily third world countries, but definitely not like the higher developed or first world countries.
Gotcha. So
the cost of things was far less, even though it was more highly affected because the tourism was just shot for years. So there was about 10 million in material losses.
Nothing.
I know, it seems kind of low, but again, we're talking about like, you know, Thailand where it's 50 cents for a beer. So
yeah.
I'm going to go there. I'm tired of paying $10 for a beer. Fuck California. God. So it was the third largest recorded earthquake ever recorded. I did not write down the first two. I apologize. If you know them, please tweet us. Let us know.
Maybe we'll cover them later.
Yeah, maybe. Interesting. And I mean, my morbid sense of curiosity found this little factoid and I was like, whoa. It caused a passenger train operating between Maradona and Matara. I have no idea where that is. I feel like it's in India somewhere. And derailed. It was derailed and overturned by the tsunami. And it's like, this to me is like just crazy, you know, disaster movie. And claimed at least 1,700 lives, the largest single rail disaster death toll in history.
Wow.
Period. I was like, yeah. Ooh, damn. The earthquake itself. The earthquake itself, not the tsunami, but the earthquake itself was clocked at 8 to 10 minutes long. And get this, even crazier. Okay, remember how I told you about how it made the Earth's rotation?
Yeah.
It caused the planet to vibrate 0.4 inches. Like, just like, can you imagine the whole fucking planet vibrated? I don't recall this.
I don't recall.
Half an inch.
I'm just making a face. Like, I'm just making this like jaw, slack jaw face of the fuck.
I just caught her off guard. Like, what? Oh my God. Yeah. Intense.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I literally, I think, there's more. It gets better. Long-term severe damage was caused to all the ecosystems, of course, because there was a spread of solid and liquid waste, industrial chemicals, water pollution, etc. I know that we haven't talked about it, and I'm sure it will be talked about at some point on our podcast, but Katrina, the same situation, that standing water, the water that came in, that came out, destroyed structures and just pulled everything with it. And on top of it, you have dead and decaying bodies. Pretty
it's
crazy
toxic.
Amount of toxicity for a long while, unfortunately. According to NASA, the earthquake displaced the North Pole by 25 millimeters and slightly changed the shape of the fucking Earth. I'm looking at Bree right now. She's like, what?
Like my brain's trying to process like 25 millimeters. That's a pretty good chunk. It was that
vibration.
The
interesting thing is I kind of want to know how they did this, but of course this is according to NASA. So they're all a bunch of science geeks and engineers. So clearly they have a way to measure the Earth.
These are the people that I want to meet.
So it says that it, let's see. Okay. So the article I was reading said that specifically by decreasing the Earth's oblateness, I don't even know what that means, about one part in 10 million, consequently increasing the Earth's rotation and a little, and thus shortening the length of the day by 2.68 milliseconds. And I wrote right after that, I knew my days felt shorter. Fuck you, earthquake. Thanks for taking some of my day away. And it's like, you're always just like, oh, there's never enough time in a day. Well, guess what? The tsunami made it about 2.5 seconds shorter. So fuck you, tsunami.
Oh my gosh.
Right? God damn it. So impacts, huge, huge. In terms of earth devastation, in my opinion, I think it was severe. Huge, huge. So
I mean, it literally changed the earth.
Changed like the fucking earth. Like,
wow.
Changed it. Yeah. So intense. So let's get to the nitty gritty stuff. Of course, we're going to talk about some people. So, I looked at a couple of firsthand accounts. One that I looked up on, I think this was on bbc.com, Lewis Cryer, who was 18 and in Sri Lanka with his mother, Zoe, and brother Felix. They were staying at a little beach village called Una Watuna. I was like, oh, I love it. in a Gale district.
I want to go to there.
Right? It took a matter of seconds for a wall of water that was about 5 feet in height to start coming in. It was kind of a surge, which reached the first floor of our hotel. Mm-hmm. It flattened walls, trees, and the buildings around us before rising higher and higher. We tried to get people out. Miraculously, guests who had been in the room underneath us started popping up from water. Crazy. One woman was trapped in her locker room because she couldn't find her key. She said that the room filled up so quickly with water, she took what she thought would be her last breath. And luckily, she found the key, opened the door, and it burst open in pieces under pressure.
Holy shit.
Buildings were collapsing around us. We tried to pull out passing people trapped in the currents. When the water finally subsided, we made a run for higher ground and a temple that had become a makeshift refugee area. We set up camp in a hotel on a hill, and when it was safe to do so, we went back to salvage anything we could. I remember seeing rooms full of mud and fish. People came up to the temple with dead bodies. We carried one Italian woman with a suspected broken back through the debris to another hotel to get medical help. I met one guy who had been surfing, and he'd been swept out a few miles from the coast. Lucky that he made it back.
Yeah.
He had to walk through all of the death and destruction to find his family. Luckily, he found them all. Let's see. But many were left with nothing. Once back in the UK, he put on an exhibition of the photos, and he took spoke about it at school, and he raised £3,500 and sent it back to the village that he stayed.
Yeah. So
this was one of the many philanthropic things that occurred from this event. Tom and Arlette Stuip. I can't say that right. We're holidaying in Khao Lak, Thailand. There was another group of people, two brothers. Luke? I think Luke and Piers. Piers disappeared. And they searched for 5 days. They said the Thai people were amazing. They gave them food, lent them their mobile phones. A girl helping him had lost 20 members of her own family and was helping him find his family. Wow. On Phi, which is one of the islands in Thailand, which is supposed to be absolutely picturesque beaches and beautiful blue waters, 1,500 people died, and between 600 and 700 were never found. So like I said, the part of that 22,000 people includes the lost, I believe. They were very lucky to find Piers. The interesting thing is that a friend phoned his brother and said that they thought body number 199 in a makeshift morgue was wearing the pale blue shorts that he had on. They had a conversation about what was sky blue, navy blue, etc., blah, 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 found out that it wasn't him. They sat down in the morgue and did a slideshow of the bodies and found that he was like body number 358 or something like that. So they had to number bodies, and you had to go off of very like clothing that they had on, because their bodies were almost indecipherable. I mean, you, after being in the ocean, yeah, if you're in the ocean for 3 days, it basically turns black.
Yeah.
You've got nothing. So tattoos practically disappear, moles, scars, things like that. They're indecipherable. You can't tell.
Yeah.
There was one particular first account that it was a guy's daughter who passed away. She had happened to get a tooth infection the day after she arrived, was lucky enough to get into the dentist office on the 24th. So they actually had dental records that they could work from, but that was very rare. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I read another person's account who said they stood after a few seconds of being submerged from the first wave and started screaming just as quickly as they could stand. He was knocked down again into the water, but he didn't surrender at that point. It was all survival. I believe this was a kid, and I can't remember his fucking name. Yeah, I don't know why I didn't write it down. Hold on, did I write it down? No, I didn't. Of course I didn't. Of course I didn't, because that's what I don't do. anyway, I think he was 11.
Wow.
So this kid said at this point, it's all survival. I'm like, the fact that 11 year old kid was like, fuck, you know?
Yeah. Do what I got to do.
So this is the part when I said in the beginning that the impossible created on film exactly what I read as to what somebody felt like going through a tsunami, actually physically being carried in these waves. Bricks, cars, and everything else the wave took with it struck him as he was thrown back and forth. When people ask me how it felt, I say, imagine being thrown into a washing machine and someone pressing on for 10 to 15 minutes. And then imagine that with debris.
Wow.
It's insane. If you have a chance, go to YouTube and just Google the impossible tsunami scene. And I think maybe they'll have a cut from it. But basically, they show the scene with Naomi Watts at the very end of the film, what she went through. And you see her struggling to get to her son, which I think is also around 10 or 11 years old. He's a younger boy, but old enough to be like, you know, watcher of his two little brothers and so on.
Yeah.
He was also tossed through the wave, but happened to get I think because of just his size alone, was not hit as much by the random debris. But you see her get hit with a tree. You see her rip her, almost her leg off. And I think I don't know if they amputated the leg or not. I can't remember. You see her get hit in the face with a brick and knocked out. The incredible force that this wave is pushing all of this debris into your own body and then tossing you. I mean, I don't know how she didn't drown, because it's like, how do you breathe? I mean, you hold your breath,
yeah,
and knocked and like just smashed in every way.
And just disoriented. And also because
exactly.
The water, especially salt water, makes things so buoyant, but yep. Then there's so much power behind it when it's like in a tsunami, because they can go multiple miles per hour.
Correct. Yes.
You know,
incredibly, incredibly fast. This kid's last name was Israelson. So he was a Swedish kid. He had several family members, I think about four or five, mm-hmm. brothers and sisters, mom and dad. He actually was, not adopted, but basically a family said that he was part of his family so that he could get back to Switzerland, mm-hmm. where his aunt took care of him. And he was forever grateful. And it was life-changing for him. He basically is just, you know, created an environment where he could heal properly and understand that everybody who came out of this has a new respect for the ocean. Everyone. Yeah. He indicates that, so it says, as the flood began to slow, Israelson was able to get his head out of the water, saw the complete chaos. He clutched some wood near a tree, too weak to cry. He sat in silence, observing the destruction with adolescent eyes. When he had a chance to get to the hospital, he said it was like it was out of a movie. The Impossible, a movie about the tsunami, rung true to him. I mean, it's Hollywood, but the experience isn't a good reflection of what actually happened. They showed the exact same hospital that I even went to. It's very accurate. And it was like, whoa. The people that came in during the tsunami, and one of the interesting things is that the Bennetts, which is the movie who's about, they mm-hmm. wrote a different name on her. They wrote people's names on their arm so they could track it. Because it's like, you know, I don't know if it's just in that particular hospital they didn't have the plastic bracelets, or it was just too overrun, or yeah. the hospital was just not capable of doing it because of the situation that they were in. But basically, they just wrote people's names. So they wrote somebody else's name on her arm. So she was actually like moved to another area. And then the kid, the son who was with her the whole time, like lost her. And like, the cool thing is her son became sort of a connection for a lot of people. She's like, you're really good at helping people. Why don't you go from bed to bed and see if you can help people find their family members? She encouraged him to do that. And he went around and found people for other people and reconnected lots of families. So super sweet.
I know. I love those wholesome yeah. things.
Me too. Long story short, lots of economic damage, lots of personal property damage. There are still areas that are still kind of recovering. Again, because, you know, tourism was such a big thing there. Families that have been through it, there, of course, are people that are probably still going on, you know, undergoing therapy for PTSD. It was very, very traumatic. And like I said, every single person that came out of it was like, I have a newfound respect for the sea. I know that if I was ever in a situation where I saw the ocean started to drift out as far as it did, I would grab anyone who was important to me and run like hell. Like,
it's
not even a thought, but I would say also that, holy shit, that's fascinating. And especially for people who have never had experience with it or knew about it. A lot of these people are in landlocked locations that don't go to the beach often, or they do, but they have like a regular old experience. And it's like, you know, an earthquake comes along that's so devastating that it produces an effect that's so mesmerizing to watch. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to go away. And it was tearing me apart to watch these people just follow the sea out. And I'm like, what are they doing? Oh my God. No.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's like, I kind of get it. Well, because also, if I was like,
everyone knows how right. tsunamis work and what they do.
Right.
Yeah.
So I hope we're educating you guys. If you see the ocean move away from you at a very fast pace and start clearing out, take cover, people.
Yep.
Duck and cover, bitch. Duck and cover. Fucking run.
What you do is you look for the highest point that you Correct. Can run within like 5 minutes, essentially, if you even have that amount of time, and yep. you run as yep. fast and as far up as you can go, yep. preferably an actual hill over a building, but sometimes a building's what you have, but buildings aren't as trustworthy.
I just feel like if I was there, I'd already be like drunk. Like, I'd just be like, whoa, fuck, that's a tsunami. Fuck? And then I would grab my drink and go. Yeah, the footage was incredible to watch. Scary, devastating, eye-opening, and for sure heartfelt for everybody who didn't make it, which was unfortunately a lot of people. But again, what we have to be cognizant of is that this world is changing, legitimately changing. And when we have things like this occur, we have to be ready. So I know that I did do a little bit of research on preparation. They do have warning systems in place, sound horns, etc. It gives a little bit more time, not a ton. Mm-hmm. But the good thing is that they have these huge bull horns that would basically announce tsunami warning, leave the beach immediately, run this way, blah, 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 whatever it is they're going to say. Whereas before, you just had people taking pictures and like looking at stuff and going, wow, this is really interesting. And now you have an alarm or an alert system. So that's one thing that came of it. And the other, of course, is all the various amount of charities that came out of this. Is a huge amount of foundations and funds and so on that came out of this particularly devastating event. Such as life.
Wow. That was a good one, Brett. That was so, wow. That was intense.
Yeah. It was super intense. And like I said, you know, I sat there and watched the movie and I was like, of course I'm crying, you know? And I'm like,
Oh yeah.
But I think the most epic thing that stayed with me was watching Naomi Watts go through underwater, all of that shit. I mean, it was like literally being in a washing machine with very heavy, sharp objects. And I'm like, what are the chances you're not going to get hit?
That's just so hard to fathom. I'm just really into the word fathom today. And every time we'll do this, I'm like, this fathom, how do I fathom?
This is fathomtastic. Yeah. So ladies and gents, water goes out, run. That's your golden rule right there.
Run fast.
Don't stick around and watch and do video. Yep. So, yep. Wow. Bree, I'm excited for yours.
Oh my gosh.
I got a text message today.
I had to send Brett, she knew what I was doing, but
she sent me a flagrantly, like, just.
You can't tell them.
I was offended.
You should have been.
I wasn't offended.
We'll talk about how it could be offensive what you don't do without consent.
My senses were offended.
I should have asked for consent first. Not that we're making fun of consent. We're just making fun of our situation. Okay. Yes. So I am also doing international disaster.
Oh yeah. That was our thing. We're international folks. We're the IHOP of disasters today. That's our title. IHOP of disasters. The pancakes of disasters.
The pancakes of disasters. Caleb, my husband, recommended this to me, and he's the one who sent me one of the articles. So,
yay!
I am doing Pompeii. So we
get to girl. Yeah,
all about it. This is another thing where I've heard of it. I knew.
Epic.
Yeah, I knew it was a thing, but I didn't exactly know it was all one why it's so important nowadays, and two, like what exactly went down. So
I was so fascinated by this as a kid.
Oh my gosh. I'm
serious.
This is like, and like I said, like I've heard of it. I just didn't know all the details. And this is part of the reason why I love doing this is I get to share it with others too.
Yay.
So the resources I have is Wikipedia, surprise, justfunfacts.com, aroundrometours.org,
awesome.
Pompeiana.org, Britannica.
Shut up, like the encyclopedias?
Yes.
Or
.com. I think .com. That was a fun one. Eyewitnesshistory.com, BBC.com, the National Geographic website, Rick Steves Europe video on Hulu, and then April 24th, 79 AD, the Destruction of Pompeii documentary video.
I think I watched that. Is it an old documentary or is it new?
That was a newer one. The Rick Stevens was older one. This one is new one.
Yeah.
I found it on the PSU site. I think it was 2017. Okay. So since I'm a student at Portland State University, I get more resources at this time to more library stuff. I did check the
She gets more than me.
Well, I check my local library for videos too.
Oh, God, that's a good idea. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Look at me not being resourceful.
Once again, I kind of wrote out. So let's see how well I can do this. So Pompeii is south of Italy, about 14 miles from Naples, and it is in the Campania region.
Lovely.
So it's about 5 miles from Mount Vesuvius. Vesuvius. I had to practice how to say that. Yeah. Yep. The city was built 131 feet above sea level on a lava plateau on the coast.
Well, that was dumb. Well, sorry.
You're going to learn about like some of the things of what happened and why. So yeah. What's great about it is it's really close to the coast, and it's really, it's also at the mouth of the Soma River, I believe. Of course, I didn't write this down, but it's at the mouth of the river too. So it's a perfect port city.
Got it.
Which is awesome for the Romans and other people who live there. And the city spanned 170 acres and around 11,000 to 15,000 people lived there towards the end when it was Roman ruled. Okay. There's also other communities around there that other than just Pompeii, there's Herculeum, something like that. We'll talk about it in a second.
So it was kind of like a city center, and then just kind of sprawled out from there.
And I guess the question, so Pomp is, I heard there was like, oh, it's Greek meaning to go with these gods, these Greek gods. And then someone's like, oh, but Pomp means five in Latin. So it's like five villages, and like, oh, but Pomp
this.
So trying to find different ways where Pompeii came from. I saw three different reasons why it was called Pompeii.
Okay.
So gotcha. I don't know what the actual fact is, but it's just like how it might be like the Portland and then the suburbs around Portland.
Okay.
But
that
there
makes
are
sense.
Also just other communities and villages in the area. It's yeah. not like it was just Pompeii and the only thing around there.
Okay.
They're just the most well-known. I think because they were the biggest and they had the most stuff going on.
Got it.
First settlements in the area date back to the 8th century BC when Oscans from central Italy found the villages in the area mm-hmm. and I guess not found, but like created the villages in the area. And so it has a huge history of people who lived there up to when the Romans came in and lived in Pompeii. And I was going to write the history, but y'all, you could just read it. It's
goddamn
it gets
history
confusing.
Lessons.
I mean, okay. Because Romans are there before 62.
Romans fuck everything up.
Yeah, but they come in like sometime in AD, and then I don't really think I need to start the 8th century BC and go through all the history. But essentially, there were like people who moved in, took over. There were wars and fights and probably revolutions and blah, 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 or something like that. I don't know.
Uprisings.
So we got
and
Romans
upheavals.
There. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
So we hear
classic
and Romans are here.
Classic Pompeii.
Classic Pompeii. I don't know why that's so funny. I think it's your med being contagious on my end.
Yeah.
So the area did get many earthquakes, and that includes February 5th, 62 AD. Does
Fuck,
anyone
they
know
nailed
why?
Down to February 5th?
Yeah. And does anyone know why February 5th is so important?
It's halfway to Valentine's. No.
Because it's my birthday.
No, it's not. Oh. I should know that.
Yeah. Well, wah, wah, I don't know wah. When you're, I don't know anyone's birthday. I don't know
I'm
when
a Gemini,
birthday.
Bitch, May 22nd. What?
Oh, yeah. I'm Aquarius, yeah. Which almost makes sense.
Age of Aquarius.
Which is funny because we are the water bearers, but we're an air sign.
I think I'm like two as well, but I think that's because of the whole like dual, like I'm born on the cusp of Taurus and then I've got,
oh. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. So yeah. So, February 5th, 62 AD, a huge earthquake estimated between 5 or 6 Richter scale. So not 9+, but 5 to 6 Richter scale, which for what kind of buildings they had, obviously they didn't have seismic regulations. So
at that time, I don't think Richter had been born yet. So safe to say that it was just fucking strong.
Exactly. And so it caused quite a bit of damage. And after the earthquake, fires took over because they had like gas lamps and such. And that just caused an ablaze throughout the city. And so there was a shit ton of chaos in the city.
Yep. Okay. I see it.
So,
and next.
So part of there's an argument that between then and 79, they weren't very prosperous, but actually they show that there's a lot of rebuilding that happened after that earthquake in 62.
See, that's what they do. Rebuild.
Which is something that we're going to talk about, too, which is it all links. So I get so excited and I was like, I just want to say everything, but I don't want to ruin it. So 17 years later, after that earthquake, August 23rd, 79 AD, fish and animals were sacrificed to Vulcan, the Roman god of fire, to provide safety to livestock and crops. This is where I also found out that Vulcan is apparently part of the reason why volcanoes are called volcanoes, because Vulcan
really
volcano,
okay That makes sense.
And the god of fire.
Got it.
The next day, on August 24th, 79 AD, about noon, columns of smoke began to come from Mount Vesuvius. Pliny the Younger, years later,
oh my god, like the beer.
Oh, is there a Pliny?
There is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You didn't know wait, what? Are you joking?
Yeah, I didn't know that. P-L-I-N-Y.
You didn't know that there's Russian River makes Pliny the Elder and Pliny the Younger?
Oh, no.
I have one in the fucking fridge right now. Are you serious?
Yeah, I love that. That's hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Why are you not drinking this right now?
Bitch. Okay. There's two in there, and I don't want to. AJ bought them both, and I feel bad if I drink one because I'm an alcoholic, and I probably shouldn't drink all the booze.
I didn't buy any booze, and
shit.
I had wine left.
I don't. So I'm going to have to look into Russian River and, like, why they call it that or why they decided. Maybe that was, like, because it was, like, boom, this is the most. I don't fucking know. But, wow.
It should be really. I'm interested. You have to let me know why.
Amazing.
So yeah, so Pliny the Younger, years later, wrote letters about his experience during the eruption. And for what we know of, he's the only eyewitness that we have. And he was writing the letters because his uncle, Pliny the Elder, was going to save someone.
Okay.
Like, I think someone, like, sent out a letter or, like, a note or whatever that was like, help me, I'm stuck. And so the elder was like, oh, my God, I'm going to go save them and then gather more people. And then the next day they found his dead body. Unfortunately, he did not make it. And so Pliny the Younger was writing these letters to prove his uncle was, one, doing it for science because he was, like, trying to investigate also what was happening with the volcano.
Yeah.
And two, because he was heroic. Like, and so that's part of the reason
he
for the letters.
Ran into a volcano, basically.
Yeah.
A volcano environment.
The volcano
environment. And was like, I'm going to save people. God, that is so cool. I need to do research now on Pliny's because I drink them.
Yeah. No, that's super exciting.
Interesting little fact and side note, totally nothing to do with any of this, but Pliny the Elder is a beer that's available most of the year, but Pliny the Younger, people freaking just go nuts for because I think they only make like six tiny little kegs for like the entire West Coast.
Oh, weird.
Or, you know, wherever. But yeah. It's very rarely made. So the Pliny the
very
Younger
exclusive.
Is like the one that's coveted. So yeah, little beer knowledge for you kids.
There you go to go with this very well.
From your neighboring alcoholic.
What's also funny about Pliny too is this type of eruption that it was is super powerful and explosive and intense. Yep. And now they call it the Plian kind of eruption after Pliny.
So, well, I knew about
he described it.
I get no, that's different. So I'm thinking pyroclastic, and I think that's like the type.
You're gonna hear that.
Okay, so that comes out, but it's still not Pliny. It's not.
Yeah,
okay.
It's not Pliny. Yeah. And the other kind, which I guess I talk about, but I'll just skip over it then, is I think like Hawaii was an example where it's just like forever oozing out. Like a
Oh, I love
gross zit. There's two kind of zits when you pop it. There's the one that explodes and hit the mirror, and there's the one that.
And then the one that's just gonna kind of just.
Yeah, and that's. Volcanoes are the same. I'm sorry. I'm sure people are like gagging in their cars right now. Like, why would you say that?
Right. They're the most satisfying.
So the type of eruption, column in the air of smoke and shit.
I mean, fucking high.
Just like everything. Yeah. And they said like,
I mean, it blew everything off of the mountain. So like trees and dirt and
exactly. Everything. So like, and that it created a crater. And it branched out, some people said. So it was just like up and out. So much smoke, so much ash. So pumice flew in the air. And they say like first, I think, I want to say it was like smaller and it became bigger and bigger and bigger. And that was like one of the things that started hitting people.
It was a boulder that just took an entire human being out.
legitimately, yes. There's numbers on that too. So as the wind pushed the explosion north, ashes came down like a blizzard covering the city. Why Pompeii was so covered with a lot of stuff. And I think they would have still died regardless, but they would have been, I think some people would have survived. The theory is if the wind didn't go north and if it went south, Pompeii would have survived and it would have been some other people dying.
Interestingly enough. So like called it, that was like basically like an ash blizzard. So you can't see at all. Yeah. But I would think that that would be harder to breathe than an actual blizzard because you have the gas involved with the ash and the ash of the particles are so thin that they actually are bigger than molecules of air. So they would clog your lungs and
Well, and
I'd imagine people suffocated.
Smoke. There's something about smoke that also it's really bad for you. There's like, I think I was talking my husband, sorry, that sounded really dumb. But there's toxins in smoke and even like secondhand where like
husband. So bad for y'all.
So bad. So like the turnouts that my husband wore for volunteering, he says that they're not allowed inside the fire station because
they're toxic.
Yeah. Pliny and his mother escaped 90 miles away through the darkness of Mount Suvius created.
Wow.
So the pyroclastic surge, yes, as Brett brought up, it surged and flow out, reaching up to 500 degrees and flowed at a speed at over 180 miles per hour at times. And I will say all these numbers, it was like, it was up to 480 degrees. And one was like, it was 1,000 degrees. And I was like, oh, maybe not.
Yeah. And you're going to get everything when it's that old.
Yeah. There was just so much different. And I think there's still volcanoes that explode like this. So they have some things that they're looking at. But 500 degrees, you just pretty much instantly die when that hits.
Yep.
Which is crazy.
I'm going to say it's a little warm.
Yeah. And so it's the gases, like the gases in the air, and it's the heat. And I think it's actually part of the lava.
Oh my God. So it's like a convection oven.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
That's like, a great, like, if you think about like a convection metaphor. Oven.
Like literally all the air is just fucking baking you, you know?
Yeah. Literally, yeah.
With the gases and all the other shit that's in it.
Yeah. And so originally it was thought that it was like asphyxiation, like from suffocating. But then they're like, actually, most people die from the heat. And then that goes into more details of later. So the heat was a cause of death of, and I'm going to say at least 2,000 people. It says 2,000 people. I'm going to say at least 2,000 people and not the suffocation as the earlier thought. So that gas and ash may have caused asphyxiation or it may have killed Pompeii's resident with a thermal shock that rapidly cooked their bodies.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, like a convection, just inhaling all of that heat and just being like, poof, I'm cooked.
Yeah. And it's just hitting you. Not even that. It's just like hitting your body. And so this, this is partially from the BBC article that says like this causes instant muscle stiffening, known as cadaveric shock. So pretty much you get hit with the fire. I mean, 500 degrees, you're going to straight up die, but you still have, some people still had bodies when they died. So like you just kind of turn blackened and charcoaled, I guess, in theory. Yeah. And then you stiffen up and make weird poses.
I just looked it up. It says it's instantaneous rigor.
Oh, gross. So these explosions came off as surprises since no one knew that Mount Vesuvius was a volcano.
Oh shit.
So when they moved there, they didn't know it was a volcano.
What?
They didn't know any of this was going to happen.
They're what a pretty hill.
Yeah. Mount Suvius is a part of the volcano arc. And the arc does come from the Africa tectonic plate. And it's being subducted under the Eurasian plate. Mm-hmm. And the peak was covered with vegetation and forest. And
it just looked like a mountain.
Yeah. And the previous eruption was about 1,800 years prior.
You know, I'm going to say that I like have mountain PTSD. Every single mountain I ever go on, I'm like, it's a volcano.
This is a volcano. I mean, now
I could die in a minute. I'm skiing on a fucking volcano.
The only thing that I feel like we don't know always if a volcano actually is is because sometimes like, oh, it's a dead volcano.
You don't
volcano,
know it's not active. It could be a dead volcano. Yeah. But the thing is, it's 10 years from now. It could explode anyway, just because it happens to be like near a certain place. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm wary of mountains.
Yeah, me too. I mean, like I have that same thought, like it could be dead and it could also not be. So they moved to this area. There wasn't an earthquake like over almost 2,000 years prior was the last earthquake. However, I don't think they really understand because it's on the lava plateau. So you would think maybe they were digging, which is great for plants and stuff like when it's all mixed together. But you would think they would notice, but maybe they don't know what lava is, like what it looks like and where it's from kind of thing.
Yeah.
If there's already lava and it's so
old. It's a hot river.
Yeah, and it is like about 2,000 years old that they just didn't know. So that's partially why it became such a surprise. And that's why Pliny the Elder was like, the fuck? Let me go research this and save people while I'm at it.
Right.
The most recent eruption we had that was from there is 1944. And what's interesting in the last few like centuries, it's like, 19th century had 6 and the 18th century had 8. And so they've had a lot. So I am kind of curious as a general question, like, I wonder if Mount Vesuvius erupting is anything like Cascadia in the Pacific Northwest and like our area. Like,
I feel like it is the Earth. We're on this round ball.
Yeah.
All of these subduction zones have a connection in some way, shape, or form via plates. Yeah. So really, I kind of feel like it's kind of like a slippery slope. You know, it's like one goes, who knows that the next one's not going to go. You know what I mean? So
somebody say slippery slope because you like slide.
It's a slip, right? They slip on each other.
That was a pod.
Oh my God.
Of course, slip we're full is of them, very, folks. slip is a very misleading term, really, when it comes to plates.
But, you know, I mean, I agree that, like, I think there is something to be said for that activity where it's happening in one place and happening in another too. So
yeah, and technology is so different now that they're literally tracking all the earthquakes and like
everything
and all the volcanic activity. And so like this arc that it's a part of, it's like there's volcanoes in the ocean, which I forget that volcanoes exist in the ocean, which is one of the coolest videos ever.
They're in the Ring of Fire, baby.
Yeah, it's I love it.
It's so neat to watch. I was like, that's one of the things I was fascinated by as a kid.
Yeah, I agree. I'm still fascinated by like watching them.
Of course.
So the first few hours, pumice covered the city, and then I put a slayer instead of a slayer. Oh. And then Slayer came and played a band.
And a Slayer came and played a show. Out. Yeah.
So first few hours you have a pumice slayer, and then after that you have a layer of lapilli, which I forget what that is, but it's darker. I know that. And then that's topped off with a couple few layers of superposed strata. So essentially they can see and they can give you actual times of like, this was a few hours and this was this many hours. And by 8 o'clock, this is like when it was started dying down.
By breaking down the layers. That's awesome.
Yeah. Which is really, cause you know, it's literally history and they can like look into it. Pompeii and the surrounding communities, which is Herculaneum, Stabiae, and Torre Annunziata. That was offensive. I'm sorry. I tried. And that just came off more.
Everyone is dropping us right now off this podcast. Yeah, all of our international listeners are gone.
It's so hard, though. Annunziata.
Okay.
We're buried by about 20 feet of pumice and ash.
Holy shitballs.
So essentially Pompeii
was surviving that.
Yeah. Buried. And like it's buried, it's covered. So they knew it was there, but they kind of like looked at it and was like, it's kind of like when you go up to somebody like, oh, like is my car totaled or not? And pretty much they walked up to a car that's completely smashed flat and they just go, yeah, no, we're not messing with that here. Like, yeah, no, we're not rebuilding that. We're not messing with that. There's no point. Yeah.
Let's just walk away. Work.
Yeah, exactly. It was just a big nope.
Mount Vesuvius happened. Nope.
So
sorry, guys.
So, it was essentially hidden for 1500 years, but it did get to a point where people didn't quite know it was there. In 1599, Fontana, who is an Italian architect, came across the ruins and he was there for a minute. I don't know. It doesn't give me a lot of information of what he did there other than I think he was like building around the area or he like made a tunnel or something and goes, oh, okay, I found something neat. And then during 1700s, Pompeii and its communities began to be an interest to many. And part of that says there were someone's, I think it was King Charles, I'm sure I have it written down, was like, hey, I want to like build my palace, I think in the area. And then they're like, hey, look at this. He's like, hey, can you get that statue?
I'm going to send some people out.
Yeah, like give me a statue and then get me this. Let's decorate my house with this shit. Yeah. And then house, aka palace. And then a farmer was like building a well and came across some treasures in the area. So word started getting out that there was stuff out there. So robbers would come in and build tunnels and steal like marble veneer and statues and other riches. Which is totally fun. I mean, you almost get it like
you have a fleeting moment. Yeah, you have a fleeting moment of like, ooh. I mean, I'm not going to lie. When I watched the tsunami video and they showed them walking around like grabbing stuff and it's like they were grabbing things like cans of Coca-Cola that were unopened and food.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense. But it's like you can't help like I maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm an evil, evil person. But like if you're walking by something and you see like gold or money or whatever, and you're like,
yeah,
but then you're like, okay, wait, you're in a disaster situation. That doesn't even matter anymore. You know what I mean?
And I mean, but maybe it will. Maybe it will in 5 years. I mean, a new iPhone would be nice.
I know, right? Just buried in there. In a waterproof case. An otter? An otter box?
Life.
An otter box and a piece of plastic that doesn't melt.
What is it called? It's a life something. There's a
life case.
Life proof.
Life proof? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's called life proof case.
I mean, I could see why places like that are, I mean, it's opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, nobody lives there. I'm going to go get gold or pearls or whatever.
Did have to work for the treasures a little because they did have to dig through it. So eventually Fiorelli took over the excavation, and it's credited with the discovery of Pompeii, really. And his goal was
this is in the 1700s, right?
Yes.
Or does it say? Okay.
It's around 1750 or something like that. Because people were finding it and going through it and being like, oh, look, there's like Pompeii, we're finding it, and start going through it, and they're fucking it up. They're going from the bottom up.
It was like the mummy thing where people I remember going through my anthropology and archaeology classes and hearing about people who would destroy sites because they wanted mummy dust. Because they heard rumors that it would make you live forever and shit like that. So I would imagine it was the same kind of like fanaticism at that time, like Pompeii, find treasures and blah, 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 you know, and people just.
And I think it's also this untrained people like, okay, let's go through and get things up and they don't know what they're doing.
No, they're not anthropologists or, you know, archaeologists or people who understand history and the fragility of it. So.
Exactly. And so that's part of the issue was the untrained. And it was between the untrained workers and the robbers that were destroying the history left behind.
Yep.
That was, he wanted to discontinue that. Such dicks. So 1763 is when Ray Publique, I don't know why I try to say this. It's REI, that store that sells the stuff that you can return. So
shut up.
Ray Publique. I wasn't serious.
Oh, well, I was
first
like,
REI, I was
oh
in
my
Rome.
God, is this where REI came from? I was so excited. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I just imagine someone returning their horse. Like,
God, listeners, Brett's blonde. So it's me talking, Brett. I'm blonde. Amazing. Yeah,
so essentially, that's when it was discovered that it was Pompeii.
Wow.
Excavation began to be performed from top down to help prevent further damage. So I think we were going through the tunnels and everything. And so Fiorelli was like, I actually know what I'm doing. So listen to me. Yeah. Cause he is I'm pretty sure he was an archaeologist and
great.
Came in, was like, this is how you do this. Let's go from top down. Let's preserve this instead of just seeing what's here. We want to preserve it and make it last. Great. Thank you for that. I know he's not around anymore.
But we thank you anyways.
For sure. So the ashes that covered the city is what kept it so well preserved. And this is because it eliminated some of the moisture and air exposure.
Wow.
So this volcano, why it's so important is it created a snapshot of the time and the day and how Romans lived their lives in Pompeii.
Nice.
Since it happened in the middle of day, in the middle of noon, you actually, instead of what you saw, because a lot of history, we look at writings. And so it's like literature. And it's kind of like when we talk about like comparing our lives to media versus what our lives are really like.
Right.
This was like, we have writings on the Romans, but this is actually a picture of what
it's
what
history.
Romans
it's
are doing.
Right
yeah, it's history. Yeah. So you saw the wealthy and the not so wealthy and all that. So uncovered was a thriving and advanced city. Pompeii had an amphitheater, which is the oldest stone building of its kind known, dating back to 80 BC.
Shit.
Yeah, it's old.
That's old.
That might have been when the Greeks old, or I don't remember when Romans came, but it has.
We're not history podcasters, people.
Only kind of, sort of, but not. It also had a gymnasium. It had a port, as said. And this one that kind of blew my mind is it had a water system, which
I heard that. And I thought that like that was pretty fascinating because the whole aqueduct thing I thought was attributed to a later time. So that was pretty fascinating.
I just thought that was amazing. Cool. Of course, it had a lepanar, which is a brothel. And it's actually the most famous for sex work. And then it was also... Oh. I mean, it's very they don't say sex work, but it's one of the most famous
for sex
work.
We're PC now. Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to not be offensive and give people respect.
Oh my God.
Everyone deserves respect, which is really interesting and a good Google search of what Lampanar meant. Wow. And close by was a hotel that was 1,000 square meters.
Okay.
And that's partly because it was known for a resort for the wealthy, noble, and politicians alike.
Wow.
So it was like a tourist destination for those who had money. And it's like, oh, wow. Blah, blah, blah's wife originally lived there.
Go to Pompeii.
They went all the time. Yeah. It was like, I'm bored, honey. Let's do some Pompeii. And they go, okay.
Let's go vacay.
Yep. Like those Romans. Do as the Romans, they say. So during the excavation, I'm so excited I can say this. They came up with an amazing idea. Okay. So between the layers, there were these like voids and air pockets. So kind of the way that because when I read it, I didn't understand it until I saw the picture. So it's like you have a sandwich and then in the middle you have like a tomato.
Okay.
And then someone takes the tomato, but the bread keeps the hold, keeps the shape that the tomato was in there, but there's no tomato anymore.
Okay.
So there's a void between the layers. There's this like an air pocket. So what I think this might have been Fiorelli who thought of this, but they started filling those voids and air pockets with plaster and set a mold. And then they would like dust off those molds. And they discovered that many of these voids in the layers were people. And it's in their last seconds of life. Isn't that, are you looking at pictures?
I'm looking at pictures.
And this is partially why Pompeii is so famous. It's not only the city is preserved, but it's almost like a fossil, essentially how fossils work. But with plaster, you see
there's
pretty detailed. You see faces.
Dogs.
Some of it's really heartbreaking. I think one of the first pictures is a dog.
People.
There's children, there's families, which is really
the
sad.
Expressions. They've even caught their expressions.
You can see their mouth and their eyes kind of like it's decently detailed for. And so what happened was in between the layers was organic matter, which is like people in anything there's, that there's could stuff. Decay. They decayed. So some of them have skeletons within the plasters, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. But so it decayed. So that meant that there was probably some moisture and air, but not enough to completely.
Yeah, because some of these actually have like teeth and stuff.
Yeah, I think those are the ones that have the skeleton still.
Okay, got
it. So
okay.
The skeleton, you put it, because there was one that was like, why does it have teeth? And I was like, oh, and then in the back, you can see the back of the skull. That made more sense.
Got it. Doo-doo-doo. Wow. Holy cow.
Yeah. And so sadly, they found some alone and then they found some embracing their loved ones and they found children. And like you said, a dog. So far, there are over 1,000, like 1,100 plaster cast of people. So almost what they think of the 2,000 who passed.
Wow.
384 died of falling pumice and 756 victims were killed by the pyroclastic surge. And I'm real curious how they know that. Like, how they could figure that out. Today, my husband, I'm glad that we didn't record on Saturday because today my husband sent me a picture or an article from the BBC and it is a viral plaster cast of a gentleman that in his last moments of life.
Apparently, we don't know for sure, but apparently,
most likely he was, he was choking the chicken. I just like what's like the weird terms they have. He was touching himself.
He was having some personal time.
Yes. He was thinking about you and touching himself. Oh, I'm sorry.
He was enjoying his bits and pieces.
He was saying that if he's going to go out, he's going to go out with a squirt.
I was gonna say a bang, but no, yeah, that's much more appropriate.
If it was a bang, there would have been someone else with him.
Yeah, he was by himself. That was the interesting part.
Yeah.
Oh my god, getting that text message. That was the highlight of my day. I was like, what the literal fuck? I'm so excited for tonight.
I think Caleb was like, oh my god, Caleb, this is amazing. So yeah, if you look up BBC masturbating man, it is a man laying on the ground and his hand is in a plaster mold of his penis, which is also there. Like you see the whole it, either that
surprise!
Or he was peeing and he fell backwards.
That's my other one of the chances.
I mean, I mean, might as well go out happy.
Hey, it was a very sexual town from our understanding. So,
oh, yes. I mean, I think some people talk about like Sodom and stuff. And
yeah,
part of the reason why like biblical like people and like Christians or whatnot might say that part of the reason it happened. So because the brothel, some people call it Sodom.
Uh-huh.
Or like Sodom.
Sodom.
So yeah, if you want to see, I mean, all the body plasters are super interesting. And part of the reason that they're in those poses is when we're talking about the rigor mortis kind of thing. Like,
uh-huh.
So some of the positions make more sense when they found out that like they died from the heat, which, tell you the truth, when I read that, almost made me feel better versus asphyxiation, because then I imagine it was quicker.
Fast. Yeah.
Yeah. It was 500 degrees. Instantaneous, they didn't feel it. Like they didn't, yeah. Hopefully didn't feel it so much, because it's all awful.
Yeah.
And it makes me really sad that these crazy people didn't know, had no chance.
I'm amazed at how they found him, like with the air pockets and stuff and the whole like, oh, yeah, there's pockets, let's pour plaster in. Like what a guy's fucking genius.
I don't think
it would have occurred to me. No. Because it's like, if you're digging in layers, you know what I mean? You're just going to get one layer and then the next hole is going to be a little bigger and so on, because it's a whole body. But I think it was a wise move on his part to do something like that's fantastic.
I totally agree. And it makes such a difference in what we know about Pompeii too. Yeah. And there is a thing that maybe because of the tunnels that some of those voids were dug out.
So it's a big tourist destination now, correct? Like, you know, yes, the tourism,
huge,
looking at these places. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can walk through Pompeii.
Very cool.
What's there, and you can see all the plasters. Nice. So of course they discovered several artifacts, and this includes some food, which, ooh, is very like neato burrito.
Nice.
So they found a loaf of bread, which is like a circle loaf of bread.
Oh my God.
And you can even see like the bread stamp on top. Like they stamped it with something. You can like read that.
Love it.
And then they found a jar of preserved fruit, and I think they found other stuff, but
wow,
but it told me. And as work continued excavating, they came across a historical treasure chest in Herculaneum. I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong. And this is a metaphor treasure chest. Even though a lot of the organic matter decayed in other areas, some in the Herculaneums survived. So there was, wow, like wood that was part of the structures that survived and other pieces. And inside of what they found to be the largest library of scrolls was discovered. So they stumbled across
eight.
Yes. It got so excited. Like they found, I found this maybe only in the documentary too. Like I feel like I didn't read this.
Okay.
This is what I saw in the documentary. So it was really, the guy was super excited. They came across over 1,800 scrolls of Greek and Latin writings. And so many
that were perfectly fine.
No.
But okay.
We'll get there. Yeah, but
manageable. Burnt. Looking, yeah, looking at, they could do. Could they get something, mm-hmm, out of them? No. Mm-hmm.
We'll get there. Yeah, it's mostly like hope. So yeah, I'll definitely get, okay, there of like what they're hoping. So
wow.
So a lot of these types of literatures aren't around anymore. Like, so okay, I want to say the host said it was like 90% of like the Greek originals and Latin original is not around, which I think is why they talk about how Latin could be like a dying language. So these pieces of work survived, but they're charred and they did not burn due to lack of oxygen, which is awesome, but they're pretty much these like hard condensed rolls now that are black.
Ah, shit.
So at first there was attempts to read in the scroll. So they try to like unroll them,
yeah,
and it left them crumbled and in pieces and because they're brittle and fragile.
Yeah.
However, in 1999, they came across an amazing new technology, abbreviated as MSI, which I forgot what it meant. With this technology, it can show the ink and allow, so they can like scan the a document that's charred, okay, like this.
Yeah.
And then with computers, they can essentially take away the char, but like keep the ink. So I don't know exactly how they do it, but I think it's just some fine tuning and pictures and somehow figuring out that the ink is different from the rest of the char.
Wow.
But
fantastic.
Since the scrolls, yeah, which is amazing, but the scrolls are so charred that it's not possible to unroll them without them falling to pieces yet.
Yeah.
So they might be able to get pieces of writings, but they can't unroll it. So they have the goal that's being worked on to eventually allow this goal to be scanned. And the way they said it's like they scan it line by line in intricate detail, tiny, tiny, like tiny lines, tiny piece. And they do that until they like completely unroll it, which it'll crumble to pieces.
Right.
And they have a digital replica of the scroll.
Wow.
And then they'll be able to like do the fancy smanchy MSI thing, and then they can read the scrolls.
Wow. But
like I said, a lot of research and work to make it to where they don't continuously destroy these scrolls.
It's probably extremely difficult.
Yeah. There's pretty much like some of the scrolls now are just in like a glass, almost shadow box, kind of like taped too. And some of the scrolls like held together by pig intestines, which are falling apart because apparently that's how they made them.
Whoa, no way.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. And it's kind of gross. So some of the discoveries included wall murals and paintings, and not just artists covered the walls, but so did others. All over Pompeii, graffiti was found. And so there's poetry and retellings of classic tales and other varieties.
Oh.
Of course, I'm going to tell you my favorite varieties. So love dictates what I write and Cupid guides my hands. May I die if I wish to be a god without you.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I ask you to become the support of my age. If you don't believe I have money, don't love me.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a writing that says like there's this troop of these people coming in and they'll fight at Pompeii on 31st of May. There will be hunt and awnings. And I imagine that means there's food and shade. outside or inside by a tavern, it says, if you're going to fight, get out.
That's appropriate.
Yeah. One of my favorites is, I don't care about your pregnancy, Salvila. I despise it. Because such shade existed in the day.
What the fuck? And he made it public. Yeah. Like, I'm just going to write it on a damn wall. Ooh, that is shame.
It really is. And then one says, Addy Metis got me pregnant.
Oh, shit. She going to respond. Bitch, you're going to call me out. I'm going to tell you who got me pregnant. What?
For real. And I think that's part of it. So my number one favorite. And so there's a site, if you look up. I said so like 20 times. I'm sorry. If you look up Pompeii graffiti, there was a site with as many as they could have. And I think that was the Pompania one that I said earlier with the weird URL.
Oh.
That was just a long scroll of pages. It'll tell you what door and what area. This is my favorite that came from there. Weep, you girls. My penis has given up on you. Now it penetrates men's behinds. Goodbye, wondrous femininity. Femininity.
That's the first coming out.
Yes. I thought it was. Yeah. And I think.
That's amazing. I'm going to tell everybody I'm gay. What's up?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That is hilarious. And amazing.
I love that.
Oh, my God.
I wonder if that was like by a brothel. I feel like that might have been in a brothel.
Oh, my God.
So.
He apologized to the ladies.
Yeah. Sorry, you ladies.
Sorry, ladies.
Goodbye, wondrous femininity.
Most forbiddenness.
So there's still at least a third of the city buried, and it's still being worked on.
Holy shit. And I didn't know it was that much.
Yeah. It's because it's 170 acres. So it's a big stretch of land. It's frustrating because so they found like they continue found concrete floors and mosaics and paintings and other pieces.
It's an ongoing project for sure.
Yeah. All these pieces. And it's totally ongoing. And, you know, when I was talking about that 62 AD earthquake and how they're like the rebuilding, they can tell they rebuilt the because they could find where the rebuilding was happening and when paintings were being painted again and like fixed up.
No
so
shit.
So that's how they got that information. The kind of hard part is a lot of the view that we have on Pompeii, even though 2/3 of it done, has to do with more of the riches because they have like 5 of the richest people's homes done and they're long, huge. And you could kind of get like where the slaves lived, but they don't have as much of the everyday people because people want to see the riches. They want to see
that's the fascinating stuff.
Yeah. They want to see the fancy stuff. So the third they think is more of like everyday town people. And that's being brought up. And like I said, like they'll find vases. Like, oh, yeah, we're in here and we found a whole bunch of vases. And you look at the paintings, which is like the graffiti, and you see it all. Because it's called like Francesco. I mean,
looking at it, like, so I just did just, I just Googled just Pompeii. That's it.
Yeah.
And so they have pictures and it's like, I'm looking at this one I'm showing Brie. That's pretty expansive for a city.
That's huge.
So I guess I would imagine it would take some time to go through all of that. Wow. Crazy.
Most of my shock about it is how well everything is preserved and like how they, you can, like the mosaics are so beautiful. All the beautiful,
there's
round
whole buildings
tiles
that are still together.
Yeah. Complete buildings, courthouses, amphitheater. Pink Floyd Columns. Did a live recorded, Yeah, they did a live recorded concert in the amphitheater. And the only people actually were there was like the people recording essentially in Pink Floyd. Yeah, no, it's an amazing place. It's on my bucket list to visit now.
For sure.
It's also probably on my bucket list to donate money or something too. Yeah. I feel like my only advice in this kind of thing is hopefully no, because this isn't 79 AD and we know more about volcanoes. Just kind of know where your volcanoes are and if they're active and follow it. And if there's an earthquake.
And how to get the fuck out fast.
Because a lot of this was, you didn't have a lot of chances. It just,
I mean,
you were fucked.
Given the, I'm looking at the crater size too. It's just insanely deep.
Yeah. I think that you're right. Like that was the eruption that it caved in from all
the heat
and
stuff in the
column. I feel
like this is incredibly violent. I mean, no escaping that.
That's why they had the name. It's, I guess, Mount St. Helen. There was like four. It was the most violent volcano eruption possibly, and there's only like four others that we know of that were similar, and St. Helens is one. So yeah, that is Pompeii. Hopefully people learn new things.
So cool.
Yeah, I want to go there really bad and check it out and kind of like almost like respect for the people there too.
For sure. But I mean, again, you know, it's a fascination with the, you know, the fact that like something like this occurred. You could see that, yes, some people were running, but other people were just kind of like just living life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the only people running was like, I don't know how Pliny got out because they went 90 miles. I mean, it's one of those things. They just happened not to get any of the surges or pumices too, you know?
And yeah. The direction they were running, or they happened to have some kind of coverage, or, you know?
Exactly. And that smoke covered, there's pictures of like
a really fast horse
adaptions. Yeah, very fast horse. There's like pictures of like how far the smoke went, kind of that they guessed how far it went. So it's interesting.
So
blows my
crazy
mind.
I'm actually blown away by the amount of artwork that's still there, you know, that they've uncovered.
I want everybody to take a look at the artwork or graffiti or any of the paintings. Great. From what my understanding is it was like a watercolor that would soak into, because I want to say it's like stone or dirt, like the buildings were made
beautiful.
Up of, like, but the watercolor soaked in there. And it's one of those things, they do talk about some of the art of what you think it is and what it actually is. Like one of the things is like, oh, you think this man is selling bread to people, but then you realize what he's wearing, then actually he's part of royalty. And then it's probably an election where he's giving away bread to the lower class to try to get their votes kind of thing.
They were definitely very hedonistic there though. There's a lot of sexuality in all of these pictures. I'm like, whoa.
They were dirty birds.
Dirty birds.
There's a lot of
so dirty
private parts in their thing. I mean,
a lot of activities.
You heard some of that graffiti.
Little women on women. You know,
me and my husband were talking about this, about how funny it is, about how far back graffiti really goes to. And speaking of, you want to make the cross stitch about have a nice poop. There were similar graffitis to that. Like if you're reading this, you're pooping or something like that. Like
I did see the word have spelled out, but I don't know what it was alluding to. So
yeah,
what does have mean? Is it a word? I don't know.
Is it a part of word?
Is it a part of word? Is it a part of a sentence? Or is it just saying have?
Have. I mean, it has to be
Vesuvius. You could just have this city. That's what happened.
That's what happened. They took Vesuvius took it for her own.
Yup.
Telling you, Mother Nature. This is why we're doing this, because Mother Nature is.
She is not joking around.
She's not. This might have been one of my favorite disasters to research so far.
Yeah, mine too. Watching the movie, like I said, really set it in for me, and just kind of. I mean. I don't know. You learn about like how do you behave in an avalanche? And it's like, I feel like I learned how to behave in a tsunami. Like,
yeah,
scary shit.
We're learning so much.
But you can always go to ready.gov and get your preparation instructions.
That was beautiful.
UC Santa Cruz developed a tsunami preparedness as well.
Ooh.
OES.ucsc.edu. You want to look under procedures for tsunami. Mm-hmm. And the other one's Red Cross. Red Cross is actually an excellent resource as well that gives you information on preparedness for things like wildfires, earthquakes, tsunamis, and other weather events of those types. So,
also, Red Cross is on our donation page, which if you go click on through our Instagram to our, so it's Linktree, but the website thing will change eventually. So that's why I'm not giving you the actual website yet. But if you go on our Instagram or Twitter, you can get through our website through there. And there is a page of different disaster reliefs, including Red Cross to donate to.
Bree,
if you have,
what is our Twitter and Insta?
Well, let me tell you, we have, as I like to say, you can slide into our DMs or you can tweet at us at PDS Podcast. Both of them are PDS Podcast.
Yep.
You can email us. That includes suggestions, corrections, and your stories at
blatant complaints.
No, you can keep those to yourself. There's a spam folder for those.
Don't do that.
I'm very sensitive. I take too much stuff personally sometimes. So the email that you're sending only nice things to is pdangerousituation@gmail.com.
Yay. Give us a follow, guys.
Yeah.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Yes, Brett. We want everybody to subscribe and to leave a rating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, leave a rating. Even if it's not great, still a rating. We still take that into consideration. We appreciate all responses.
We appreciate.
We like the good ones better.
And 100%, if you could do it nicely, we'd appreciate it. Correct us when we are wrong, because part of this is we're learning with you.
We're learning a lot, including how to pronounce things correctly, because we suck so bad at that.
I apologize
so much. We are also doing our best not to offend and being politically correct. So of course, naturally, if we say something that is offensive, of course, we apologize. And it's not intended that way. We both have a crazy, weird, strange sense of humor. That's why we get along so well. But part of that is also having sort of like a little bit of an unusual mind. And sometimes we don't always take all into consideration if we're insulting people or not. We're just kind of being ourselves.
To be fair, we're heteronormative, married, monogamous, white females.
Way to pigeonhole us, Brie.
But I'm saying we don't always understand that we're being offensive, or we might say something or do something, that we do want that feedback to continue to be inclusive, because we don't want anyone to not listen to us because they feel like
we're ignoring them.
Yeah.
We love you.
We don't want you to
much.
Think that we're ignoring you or your plight or anything.
No.
Or your, like your life's not a joke.
Whoever knows the history of Pliny, I don't have the time to research that. So somebody tell us what's up with this guy and why he's now beer.
Yeah, the Russian River Pliny.
Tell us, what is Pliny and how did you come up with that name? I'm sure it's somewhere on the internet, but like I said, I just don't have time to look that up.
Yeah, it's probably on the back of the bottle.
Yeah.
I bet when you pick up the bottle, a can, it'll
be like. I'll look. Because like I said, I got an elder in the fridge. I'll see.
You probably have to take a picture so we can post it on the Instagram.
Totes.
By now, when you're listening to this, all the Instagram posts should be made.
Okay.
But I've been trickling them out as I not spoilers.
I've been following all the weather people.
Oh,
I don't know if
you've
got any follow backs yet, but
I followed some more too. We got a couple.
Yay.
I followed some more because it was like, you should follow 5 more people. So I went, okay. All right.
A
new avatar logo too.
Do what you're told. Oh, did you? I haven't looked. I need to go on. I need to go check it out.
Yeah. If you look at our Instagram or anything, you'll see the logo. Maybe I'll make another one eventually. I'm really hoping your husband will be like, you know what I want to do, but.
Yeah. I mean, he could come up with something pretty sweet. He's come up with a couple of my logos.
Yeah. He is incredibly talented. That's part of the reason.
So talented.
Was that good sucking up? Can you just share that with him? part of the podcast with him?
Yes. I wish he was here. He's not here. He's still coming back from his win. Big win tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
Big win.
Caleb just came back from his meeting, his firefighting board meeting thing, whatever he was doing. I don't know, community meeting, something.
Something.
Oh, I'm part. Oh, I told
you
that.
Start waving his dick at you.
I'm gonna find him in the same pose as the masturbating Pompeii man.
The masturbating man from Pompeii. Dun dun dun. All right, guys. So, lessons learned, information learned, facts and possible fictions, because we're not the best at this. But yeah, super fun. Thank you so much for listening and joining us on a particularly dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm.
And duck and cover, bitches.
Yeah, duck and cover. Till next time.
Bye.
Bye. So 666 miles between Portland and San Jose.
Did you say 666?
Yes.
Ah, stop it. Are you serious? You and I are the devil's number apart.
Maybe if we sell our soul, our podcast will get huge and we go on tour.